Thank you.
Hi, everybody. If anyone wants to come closer, you're more than welcome. Anyone's going to get a sheet, they're over here on the side. The topic for tonight is, to what extent can you steal to save a life? And what we're going to try to do tonight a little bit, and we'll try to make it as interesting as possible, going through sort of a bunch of sources can sometimes be dry, but we'll do our best. It's a real big question. It seems like it's more of an ethical quandary than anything else, which is the famous Heinz dilemma. The story was about a man named Heinz who had a wife that was unfortunately diagnosed with cancer. He wanted to get the drug. The drug was it's called radium. The guy, one person, a pharmacist, found it, and it cost him $400 to get it, and he charged $4,000 for a few drops. So the man came in and said, "My wife's dying of cancer." He said, $4,000, please." He said, "I don't have any money." He said, "Too bad." So he went around and he tried to raise a couple of dollars. He came up with $2,000, said, "I'll make you a deal. I'll pay you a couple, a little bit now, a little later." And the man said, "No, thank you." So he went out and he stole it. And the question for us and the question for tonight is that okay? Someone's dying. Can you steal someone else's property in order to save someone's life? I'm taking it even from a different perspective. Someone is in a forest. He's on a teal. He's on a trip. And he gets very cold. He has no more food. It's freezing. He's starving. And he sees a log cabin. Not his log cabin. A log cabin. Does a person have the right, should he be starving to death, freezing cold, at risk of his life, to break into the cabin, use the firewood to be warm, eat the food, etc., etc.? And that's the topic for tonight's class. And that's the topic for tonight's discussion. And before we get into it, I want to just sort of come up with one concept that I'd like to sort of use a little bit as a guiding point for us, which is, regardless of how this comes out, and for those of us that we all went to law school, we learned the concept of the Socratic method, which is Socrates came up with this concept that it's better to discuss concepts than just to be spoon-fed things, because ultimately there's a value in the discussion itself. And regardless of how we come out in the end, if anyone's learned Gemara for more than 2 minutes, the first question is, just tell me what to do. And it takes a long time for one to realize that it's not as important what to do. You'll get that. That's easy. It's the discussion. And through the discussion and the conversations is one grow. And I really, really think, and I only really appreciate this until I went through the material myself, that this is one of those discussions. We'll go through all the sources, and you'll see it on the halachic side, and then later on the legal side and the English side. But the goal, of course, for tonight is not just to present you something with law, because I can just hand that to you and we can be called it a day, and you'll know whether or not you can or can't steal to save a life. The goal is for a few minutes tonight, and then hopefully afterwards, for those that are interested, to actually push ourselves to the concepts of thinking, oh my gosh, what do we think about stealing? What does our religion really think about the concept of life and the concept of theft? And then, regardless of how we ultimately conclude, hopefully it'll shape our lives as we deal with those issues in areas that may be a little more gray. Everyone with me? Thanks for the love. I appreciate it. Okay, let's start. First, we're going to go with the halachic source. We start with Torah. We start with the top, and we move our way down. You can't start any conversation with life without quoting the pasuk in Vayikra. It's the first source. Right away, we have a concept in halacha that we got to do mitzvahs. We got to do it. We actually have to do stuff. However, there's a qualifier in the pasuk, which is the famous two words of v'chai behem, which means, should we get to a place in which doing these mitzvos are going to in any way risk your life, God says, no thank you, you are more important, forget it. Violate my Torah, save your life. Right? And this is a actual Gemara in Sanhedrin, which is source 2. Kol evar shebetor ein omrim la'adam avor v'atara gavor v'al yarog chutz me'avodas chachamim gilui rayos v'shvichas dam. Okay, and this is the deal. You got a problem with Shabbos, you got a problem with kosher, you got a problem with davening shachris, tefillin, whatever it is, forget it. If it's going to in any way risk your life, don't do it, except for the three biggies. And that is murder, illicit relations, and idolatry. And we're not going to get into it today, it's not for our conversation, but there's a, what does it mean by Hashem in Shema? We say we have to love Hashem with all levavcha, nafshecha, and how that connects, and what that, which is where some of this comes from. But however, for the topic of today's class, this is the idea. If it's not the big three, do whatever you got to do. And that's how the Rambam paskins, and that you'll see in source to be the Rambam. If someone's going to come and force you to not do mitzvos, so the Rambam quotes the pasuk that I just quoted and says, someone tells you to do something wrong, you can do it, and it's going to risk your life, you can do it. Right? You have to live with them and not die with them. When you really got to do it. This isn't a choice. You have to actually follow this. You have to live. So this is a simple, a very nice, you know, what we'll do today, which I think is an edited benefit. It's very nice to watch something start in a pasuk, move to a gemara, and then come later into more of a halachic principle, which is exactly this. Now, and the Shulchan Aruch passes the same way as well. And now, usually when I'm giving this class, and many people have said to me, Charlie, what are you talking about? And I said, I'm talking about stealing to save a life. And he said, oh yeah, it's not one of the big three, you're out. This is usually where people think the class sort of ends. Is it in the big three? No, if it's not, I can do whatever I want. But it's not that simple. And what I want to start to talk about today is an opinion that was presented by the Binyan Sion. The Binyan Sion is a Rav named Rav Yaakov Ettlinger. He lived in Germany in the 1800s. He was an Achron, he was a Rav, he was a Posek. He was a Rav in a place called Landenberg, which is near Mannheim, and he's a chief rabbi of Altona. He was a person, by the way, just on a little digression, he was a person who really did exemplify the concept, in my opinion, just learning a little about him, of what we call Torah Mada, or modern orthodoxy, which was, he went to university, he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he was able to, in many ways, look at the world in the way through the eyes of Torah. It's really Torah im derech eretz, and he was a real beacon in that area. He had a yeshiva, and one of his famous students was someone by the name of Shimshon Falhirsch. You may have heard of him. He was obviously who he was. And he's the author of the Bikur Yaakov. He's the author of the Aruch Ner and the Binyan Sion. Now, what he says is that Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, the Binyan Sion, says it's not so simple. And he starts to introduce a couple of Gemaras and opinions that show us that maybe, just maybe, you can't steal to save a life. And the first one he talks about is a Gemara in Bava Kamma. But before we get there, I want to give you the background. The Gemara in Bava Kamma quotes a story in Sefer Shmuel with David HaMelech. They're speaking about a big gibor named Shammai, and they're talking about the time in which Shammai was standing in a lentil field, so to speak, with stacks and stacks of barley and lentil, with the Plishtim, and he was fighting the Plishtim, and him alone was able to destroy everybody. And he comes back to David HaMelech, and David HaMelech says, I'm thirsty. So him and three big giborim, David HaMelech says, I'm thirsty for the water is in Beis Lechem, next to the gate, and they run and they get him the water. This is in Sefer Shmuel and Perikah Gimel, and he comes back and David HaMelech takes the water and he pours it on the floor. It's an interesting story in the end of Sefer Shmuel Beis. So the Gemara in Bava Kamma says like this, this can't be. Something's going on here. Dove is not just asking for water, risking his warriors' lives and throwing on the floor. What's really happening here is Dove is not asking for water. Mayim means Torah. He's asking for halachic guidance. And the Sha'ar, he's speaking about the Sanhedrin. That stood by the Sha'ar. This is a case, the Gemara in Bava Kamma is saying, in which David HaMelech is asking for halachic guidance. What is he asking for halachic guidance is in? So if you look with me in the source, we'll read it together. This is the Gemara in Bava Kamma, Adav Samach Amid Beis. V'yisa'aved David, v'yomer mi'ishkeni ma'im mi'bor Beis Lechem. David was thirsty. And he said, who is going to give me water from the place of Beis Lechem, asher v'sha'ar? That's next to the gate. And the three strong men came from the Machane Plishtim. And this is he quotes the pasuk. This is the story that I just told you a minute ago. The Gemara asks, "My kami bailei? What is David inquiring about? What's bothering David? What's the problem here?" Amar Rava. Rava says like this. Amar Rav Nachman, "Tamun ba'esh kami bailei." The problem here is that There's a Jewish field was on fire, and there are objects that were hidden in the field, and David's asking, do I have to cover the hidden objects? And there's a machlokas between the Rabbanim and Rav Yehuda. And he asked them, Ikar of Yehuda, Ikar of Rabbanim, who do you hold by? Do I or do I not have to compensate that? Pashtalei, and they gave him the answer. Now Rav Huna comes in. This is really what's important for us right here. Rav Huna Omer, Gedishim de Seorim de Yisrael Havu. there were stacks of barley that would belong to a Jew. The Havu Mitamre Pelishtim Bob, and the Pelishtim were hiding within it. The Kalmi Barley, and he asked, Mahu La Atzil Atzomi Mamun Chavero, can I save myself with the money of someone else? Shalchule, you would think it's absolutely. Shalchule, Asur. You can't do it. You can't burn the stacks of the barley to root out the Pelishtim to save your troops. You can't use someone else's property to save your own life. But you're the king, and it's, we know the rule, it's good to be the king. Melech has this special eminent right powers, eminent domain powers that kings have. If you have your army and you're fighting a war, you can go wherever you go. This is amazing. Gemara is saying, straight question, this is a slam dunk. I'm sure the Gemara knew, the Pasuk, v'chai b'hem, David says, what do I do? And you know what they say? You can't do it, but you know what? I got an out for you, you're the king. And if you look at the Rashi, there's a Rashi on the Pasuk, which I put in, I think, in the next quote, and Rashi says, which we, according to the Binyan, seems to be the Norman of Halachic approach of Rashi, v'yatzila, shlo yisrufeu, hol v'asila, hatzil etz atzom imam chavera. No. You can't save your own life with the property of another. Okay, that's the first Gemara that the Binyan soon brings. And here's another one. Now he brings a Gemara in Ksuvas. Chazaka. This is talking about a case in which can certain edim, can witnesses that were able to make a certain promissory note acceptable, can they invalidate it? It's a back and forth discussion that's a little bit off topic. However, this part is more germane. Chazaka ein edim chosim al shtar elim kim nasa begadol. There's a chazaka that edim don't sign shtars, they don't sign notes unless it's done with adults. Edim just don't go and they know they're minors around. They won't just sign stuff. Ella owns in my time. What happens if they are forced? Amar of Chizda, Chizkiy kasav Rameir. Chizda quotes says Rameir. Edim she'amrim lahem chosim sheker al tahargu yahargu for al yachatim sheker. What are you talking about? Chizda quotes Rameir and says, if they say to you, sign a false note, steal money, or I'll kill you, you die. What are you talking about? This is Rameir. So the Gemara brings another opinion. Amale Rava. Hashta Elu Atu the Kamen Lam Luchay. I mean, had they come to me, Amrin Luhu, I would have told them, Zilu Chos Meval, to Katlin, go sign and don't worry and don't die. The Amar Mar, because Mar said, and this is what we know, right? But you had this opinion, and the Shita Mekubet is on this, says, well, you know what? Of course, the Rambam, who says, Rav Chisda got Rameir right. There's a machlokas tanayim. Whether or not stealing whether or not your life can potentially cause you to steal. And the opinion here, which seems to be a real approach in the Gemara, and then later on, is the answer is no. Let's quote another Gemara. We're going to quote a few, and then we're going to tie this up. But what I'm trying to do here today is I'm trying to give a few different pieces in various Gemaras that give us an appreciation for, this isn't a slam dunk. This isn't so simple. And they're real people saying no. So we get a full appreciation for what the Binyan Siyam is talking about, and just how complex this issue possibly is. Look at this Gemara in Bava Kamma. This is something that later on the Meiri quotes to sort of advance the same concept in this opinion. Tanu Rabban, Tali, Ma'aseh b'chassid echad. There's a story of a chassid echad, Shehayah gonach milibo. He had a groan in his heart. He had a heart condition. Potentially, at least for this, we'll assume it's a life condition, a life-threatening condition. V'shalu l'vrofim v'omer lo, ein lo takana ad sheyinuk chalav roteach. There's no fix, there's no remedy until you drink fresh milk from Shachas to Shachas every day. Hevilo aids with Kashalo Bechari Mita. They brought him a goat and he tied it to his bed. Now, at this time, just to give you the background, there's a rule that you're not allowed to have certain animals in your domain because those animals graze on the properties of somebody else, and it's considered like stealing. He brings the animal in and ties it into his bed, and this is why the Gemara is even bringing this up. Hayayonav gimam mishachas shachas. It's working great. You got the goat drinking the milk. It's perfect. Liyam nichon suchaver levukra. Then his buddies came to visit him. So everyone came in and said, "How you doing? I haven't seen you in a long time. Heard you're feeling better. Where'd you get the goat?" Kevin shiroy osa ha'ez. They saw the ez kashur b'charimita. They knew that he violated the prohibition. of having the goat that can potentially steals. Chazur l'acharim, they turned on for Amram and they said, listim mizuyim beveso shalzeh. There are armed robbers in this house. This guy's stealing. V'anu nechnasim etzlo, we're going to go visit him. Yashvu v'budku, and they checked. V'lo matzavu ela oso avon shal ota eis. He's a chassid, he did everything right. One eis, he put in the goat. V'afu b'shas mitaso. Amr Yodani she'ein bi avon ela avon osa'ei shevasi debrechavar. And on his deathbed, the guy says, I did pretty well. I'm clear, except for the time that I brought the goat. Wait a second. We said, you didn't bring the goat because you didn't want to go to key food. We didn't bring the goat because you were lazy. This is life-threatening illnesses here. You're stealing, potentially, to save your life. Masha from the Gemara here, not so pasha. And then the Meiri quotes it as well. One more. Short. This is the Binyan Sion brings as well. And by the way, I missed this. Number four is the Binyan Sion. It's a much longer tshuva. I put it in here for you. I don't want to go through it word by word. In case you want to read it later, it's there. It's source four. Next one. Mara and Yuma. Rav Yehuda and Rav Yosef, Yukai Azli Ba'orcha. Rav Yehuda and Rav Yosef are walking down the road. Achse Bulmus. Bulmus is a life-threatening disease caused by hunger. It's a big deal. He's not just hungry. Bulmus grabbed Rav Yehuda. Kafchei l'roi. He saw a shepherd and he took his bread. Achle l'rifta. And he ate it and he healed himself. Amar lei Rav Yosi, kafta s'roi. So the Binyan says, wait a second. Rav Yosi is admonishing him. He's reprimanding him for doing such a thing. And so what I'm trying to build here is a case for maybe, just maybe, it's not so simple that you can steal to save a life. And in fact, there's a Yerushalmi in Avodah Zarah that implies that maybe it's one of the big three. And there's a Braisa Masechet Smachas that compares one who steals to one who murders and commits idolatry. And there's a Vilna Gaon also that speaks about someone who steals to somebody who is like an adulterer or a violator of Shabbos. And what we're talking about here, and this is where I want to take us a little bit, is, wait a second, we've got the big three, but is it so pashut? We see here that from many of the Gemaras, and from the Tanaim, and maybe even later, that stealing is considered one of the big three, or at least connected to it in some way, that we can't just go around stealing to save our lives. Now, before we get into the next approach, the other side of the spectrum, I want to digress for a minute. As Jews, I'll tell you what I went through going through this material. This is me. Maybe I know I'm not where I should be in life. I found myself shocked by the stuff. That we have so much stuff that we do as observant Jews. And we sometimes give priority to certain things. I would never, ever eat that. I would never, ever, ever violate that. That, I'm sure I could find a heter maybe. It seems here that the thing that we would never, ever, ever, ever do, minus the big three, is stealing. If the concept of taking someone else's property is such a big deal, potentially you have to violate your life for it. And it should hopefully create some sort of we should sensitize us a little bit to how big a deal it is if somebody who is a very religiously looking individual takes money from somebody else. Potentially, this is a really big problem. Binyan Sion, we may have a problem. Let's go on the other side before we get down to the fairway of basically how halacha paskins. The other side. The super lenient view. This is the Gemara that I have here in Bava Metzia. This is quoted ultimately by the Rashba. But we'll quote the Gemara and the Pasuk and we'll learn it together. Shnayim shayu mahalchim b'derech u'biyad echad mehem kitun shomayim. Two guys are walking on the way, and between the two of them, there's one little bit of water. Not enough water for the both of them to get to civilization. Im shotim shneihem, if they both drink, mason, they die. They both die. Im shote echad mehem, if one of them drinks, megiel yashuv, he makes it to civilization. Right? You have enough to live for the moment, but not enough to ultimately get to where you want to get to. What do? Darash ben Peturah. Peturah says like this. Mutav sheyashtu shneihem, better that both of them drink, v'yemusu. V'al yireh achad mehem misaso shel chavero. Better each one drinks a little bit and they die together. But they shouldn't see each other die. You shouldn't have. You shouldn't be in any way a cause of another person dying. Achivar Rikiva. Rikiva came and says no. V'yilmud v'chay achicha imach chayecha kodmim l'chayecha berecha. Rav Kiva comes and quotes the pasuk that I quoted next for you, which at the end says chay achicha imach, to say the precedence of your life over your friend's life shows you that should you be in a situation which only your life can make it, you have to take care of yourself first. Give yourself the drink, like on the airports. First put the mask on yourself, and then put the mask on the person next to you. That's how the halacha goes. Now, look at the Rashba. With the I don't have the Rashba, I got to tell you outside, but it's beautiful. The Rashba says like this. Okay. Who owns... Work with me for a minute. Who owns the property? Let's say you have the water. So you have enough water. You have one quart for your life. Who owns the water above the one quart? You have an obligation, obviously, because you have your friend to worry about. Such a big deal that Bapatura said you may have even have to die. Obviously, if you have any more than the water for your life, where does it go to? It's got to go to your friend. So you have some type of possession, some assignability of the property, above and beyond the property that you need to survive, that goes straight to your friend. And so, should you be in a situation in which your life is threatened, what you need to survive may have, in some legal construct, been assigned to you for your survival. You with me? Because you're learning it from here. In fact, the Chassam Sofer says something similar. The Chassam Sofer says, in his Tshuvas, that he's suggesting that the Torah may even assign the property of somebody else to the person whose life is ultimately being at risk. It's an amazing concept. It is the 180 of what we just learned. Not only are you not stealing it, it belongs to you. It's not even stealing. So you have here an amazing divergence of opinion. You have B'chai B'hem, which sort of floats out there. And then you have the Binyan Siyud in four different Gemaras, and Tanayim, and Rashi on the Gemara, saying, forget it. Die. Don't take someone else's property. And the Yerushalmi and other things. On the left you get the Rashba, and the Chassam Sofer saying, it's yours. Don't you love being a Jew? You can't just get an answer. You know what I'm saying? It's got to be a whole thing. Now let's go down the fairway. And this is sort of the normative approach to Kahalacha. And that's, we start with the Tosfos, and then we'll on Baba Kama, and then we'll move towards a different Gemara. Tosfos says like this, and I quote a few here. It's the Tosfos on the piece in Baba Kama that we did with Shmuel and David HaMelech asking the question. Tosfos says like this: Ma'ol ha'tzilatzum b'mar chaveru ibaylehu ichiyev l'shalom kishehatzilatzum b'pnei pikuach nefesh. David HaMelech. The Tosfos says, wasn't asking Sanhedrin, can I burn the field? Are you kidding me? Jews, soldiers, at a field against the enemy, barley stacks. You think David's saying, I'm going to put my soldiers at risk for someone's barley stacks? Come on, Chai Behem! You paying attention? He's asking, do I have to pay for it? If I'm going to use someone else's property for Pikuach Nefesh, if I'm going to appropriate the property to save the lives of people, do I have to ultimately pay for it? And Tosfos says later on, Sanhedrin came back, the way the question was formed was only to show how important it is to make sure that it is the last possible resort. The way Tosfos learns the Gemara isn't whether you can or you can't. The whole give and take of the Sanhedrin was, it's a big deal. You can't just, it can't be your first option. It has to be your last resort. The last thing you do to save your troops, your life, if you have to and you know what the choice is, take someone else's money. But you got to pay for it. And the Rush agrees with Tosfos on this, and there's a whole discussion between the Rush, and that's exactly what should be the normative approach to halacha, which is, if you have to, you can take it, however, you got to pay for it. Right, and that's the Gemara in Sanhedrin. And that's the next thing I quoted for you, which is the Gemara in Sanhedrin says like this. It's talking about a case of a rodef and a nirdaf. The Gemara opens up, it's not in here, it's if someone is a rodef and he breaks kalim, what is the halacha? The answer is, he's pat. Right, because he's got bigger problems, he's a rodef, the guy's got more issues than a couple of kalim. The Gemara continues. And the nirdaf, what about the person being pursued? Look at the Gemara. V'nirdav sheshiver esakelim. The nirdav is running away to save his life, and he breaks property. He destroys property along the way. Patur. He is patur shal kol adam. Chayiv shal rodef. I'm sorry.
Yirdav shira kelim shel rodef pater. Shel kol adam chayav. He is pater.
If he breaks the kelim of the rodef, he is pater. If he breaks the kelim of anybody else, he is chayav.
Shelo yamanu pater shelo yamim mamano chaviv alav mikufo.
He's pater if it's the rodef, if it's the guy pursuing him. Why is he pater for? Because if someone is pursuing someone else to get killed, what's the halacha? What can you do to the guy? You can kill him. If you can kill him, you can take his money. His life is more important than his property.
Shall call Adam.
What about everybody else?
Okay,
you can use it, but you have to pay for it.
And that seems to be the actual approach to halacha.
Right? Halacha follows the normative. It's not going to take the you can't. It's not going to take the it belongs to you. It takes the fair way. It says yes, but you got to pay for it. And if you see here, we quote the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch as the conclusion of this analysis in this area, as what you do. And you look at the Rambam, it says, Nirdav Sheshiva Kim, takes mamash from the Gemara, Sheshiva Kelim Sherodit Pater, Shlo Yemanu Chaver Megufo, Sheshiva Kelim Acherim Chayev, Shematzila Atzman Mom Chaver Chayev. Right? And then he says later on, and the Shulchan Aruch passes the same way, literally quotes verbatim. And the last thing, the last source here, which I think is source 16, Afilu he b'sakanas maves, but tzarech ligzol as chaveru kedi lahatzel napsho. If you're in sakana and you have to steal from your friend, tzarech shalik chenu ella al das l'shalom. You actually have to have the intention to pay back. And that seems to be the answer here. Halacha: if you're running, if you need to take the insulin, so to speak, or the whatever the radium. If you have to break into someone's home, if it is a life-threatening problem, seems like from halacha what you got here is you can take it, however you got to pay it back. Now, what if you're trying to save the life of someone else? There's a divergence in halacha.
Everyone knows the pasuk in Vayikra. Lo seilech rachil b'amecha, lo samod al dam re'echa, ani Hashem. Right?
There's a duty to make sure that you do not stand on your neighbor's blood, which is if somebody is in help, someone needs help, if somebody is going through a life-threatening problem and you could help, you can't sit back. You have a good Samaritan obligation to help that person out. Now, look at the Rambam says in this, which is, I think, is a powerful Rambam. Kol hayachol lahatzil, whoever can save, velo hitzil and doesn't save, over alo tamon. This is a big deal. You have an obligation to actually go out and help someone. Now, what happens if you're going to help somebody? The life you're saving isn't your own. The life you're saving is someone else. And in the process, you destroy property or you steal. What do you do? So, the Gemara continues in Sanhedrin. For Rodef Shai, Rodef Achal Rodef. Rodef is running after a Rodef. Lahatzil, to save. So you're running after the Rodef now. To save the ultimate nirdav, v'shiver kalim, and you break kalim, ben shel nirdav, ben shel kol adam. It doesn't matter whose it is; it's a third party. You're running after a guy. Some random, unrelated individual has a car in the way, and you break the car. Pater, v'lo min hadin, ella she'im iata omer kain. This isn't a legal analysis, the Gemara is saying. This is a policy decision. If I'm going to make every person pay when they're trying to save somebody else, you know what's going to end up happening? People going to look the other way. Can't have that. My most important thing we got to worry about is our lives. So here's what we're going to do. Should a person go out and try to save someone else, on the house. Whatever you break, it's fine.
And this is how the Shulchan Aruch paskens. V'achar sherodof, achar rodif, lahatzil is nirdof. V'shiver kem sherodif, ben shel rodif, ben shel kol adam patur. K'te shelo yavo limnom, lahatzil is nirdof.
And the pas, that's how the halacha paskens. Should you be in a situation which you're going to steal to save someone else's life, not your own, you don't have to pay. And I was actually talking to Rabbi Glatt before, and he was saying that it's actually a midas chesed now, that happens to be the tshuva, the halacha, but what happens if you are the person who got saved? Right? If I'm going to save the life of someone else, and in the process I break something, I don't got to pay for it. Policy. You don't want me ever paying for that. Because if I pay for it, the next guy's going to think twice. What about the guy who got saved? He doesn't have to do anything. He didn't break anything. So it's a midas chesed that actually the Achronim talk about, in which a person should pay it back. Not for now, but an interesting concept. So we see here, before we leave the halachic analysis, we see the following. Chai Bahem is the overarching concept. Stealing is a big problem. Not so simple. Bava Kamma, Rashi, Yerushalmi, all over. The Binyan Sion. We have a bunch of different examples in which Tanaim are saying, better die than sign false notes. To steal just to save a life is not a big deal. However, there is another opinion on the other side that says, forget it, it even belongs to you, it's not even considered stealing. But ultimately, the way the halacha comes out is, should you have to, you can. If it's your life, you pay for it. If it's someone else's, you don't. All in? Great. Thank you. Yeah?
What's the concept that they could steal as well? I think, isn't that because of the Hakabas and that? Because since the Ram Chachamim had a right to be mocker to any property, so they could set up these rules that the property is really not the property of the one who's
right. We should talk about it afterwards. I'll take a question at the end, but you make an interesting point. Who gives the Chum the right to do that? Which is another excellent question, which is right. Let's go into the American approach. Now let's go into the U.S. law. What is the approach of American law in the same subject? So the first thing I want to talk about is a case called... There's a concept in law called the necessity defense, which is that it's based on a principle of the greater good, which is, it sort of vindicates certain violations of law where it ultimately hits towards a greater good. If someone has a special need to do something, it can potentially be a defense to destruction of property or trespass, etc. So let's talk about I didn't have that many. I didn't want to take you through the same level of analysis. So I highlighted some of the bigger, older, more known cases in this area, and ultimately quoted the restatements, which is, let's say, the closest we can get to the Shulchan Aruch, so to speak, on the Lahavdil, on the American law. The first case is a case called Plouffe versus Putnam. It's a case that came out of Vermont in the early 1900s. The story was like this. The defendant was an owner of an island and a dock. The plaintiff was sailing, wife, husband, two small kids. It's an amazing concept. A storm breaks out. They go to the dock and they hook onto the dock to save themselves. The defendant says, I don't want you on my dock. So, see ya. And they say, we're going to die. And he says, not my problem. And he sends his servant to unhook the boat off the dock. And the boat flips around, it gets destroyed, and they suffer injuries. They sue. The court finds in their favor and says they had a right to be on that property because they had potentially in a situation of danger, of life-threatening danger. And not only do they have the right on that, but they also have the right potentially on the boat. And look at what they quote. He quotes the doctrine of necessity, which is an important doctrine that sort of finds its way and weaves its way through American law in these circumstances. But this is a nice quote in here. This doctrine of necessity, quote number 21, applies special force, to the preservation of human life. One assaulted and in peril of his life may run through the close of another to escape from his assailant. One may sacrifice the personal property of another to save his own life or the lives of his fellows. It seems to me that then the court found in favor of the plaintiff and actually awarded them both damages for injuries suffered and for the destruction of the boat. Holding, you had a right to trespass. You were allowed to be on the property because of the situation. It was a necessity doctrine. The person did not have the right to kick you off. So it seems to be what we're getting here without the background, and coming from a much different source than from halacha, obviously. The background is, in basic American law, should a necessity arise like this, life, limb, even maybe property, you have the right to commit certain torts that you wouldn't have otherwise. They take this concept from the case called Mouse's case. This is a famous case on the English bench in the 1600s that served sort of as the backbone to this concept. And what happened there was, plaintiff and defendant were on a barge heading to London, and plaintiff came on with, or one of them came on with, plaintiff came on with a casket. and they had piled up caskets, and everyone came on, and there were people in caskets on the boat. And on the way in, while they were at sea, a storm arose. Defendant said, "We're going to die." Started throwing the property off the boat, and ultimately they survived. They get back to shore. Plaintiff sues defendant for the loss of casket. And the court says, it was resolved in source 22. It was resolved that in the case of necessity to save the lives of passenger, it was lawful for the defendant, being a passenger, to cast the plaintiff's casket out of the barge. It was okay. That if the ferryman surcharge, the barge owner shall have his remedy upon the surcharge against the ferryman, but that if there be no surcharge, and the danger, this is more important, the danger accrue only by the act of God. Just as a note, by the way, this is, someone points out to me a few years ago, you ever notice that everything bad in law, what's it called? Act of God. Can you love this? But it's a different story for another time, different shear. As by tempest, without fault of the ferryman, everyone must bear his own loss to safeguard the life of man. What this case does goes much further than I think where American law goes. It says, if you're in a situation, you are the plaintiff, you are a passenger on a boat, someone else has property, you're going to die, you chuck the property off. Can you do it? Yes. You have to pay for it. The plaintiff isn't saying you can't do it. But the plaintiff is saying, I want my money. According to this case, this was a necessity, and you're not chayiv. You're not liable to pay him back. That's obviously not later. We'll see how that plays out. But that's sort of what we're getting the backbone of, ultimately, American law in this case of stealing or destroying property to save a life. The case of Vincent comes in later from Plouffe, much later, 1910, and that sort of qualifies the concept of what happens when you steal to save a life. And Vincent says like this. The story of Vincent is the story like this. You have a person that has a dock, that owns the dock, and a steamship came up to unload cargo on the dock. It takes a long time to unload this cargo. Through the process, a storm developed, and the ship didn't let go of the dock in fear of the passengers, the crew's life. Right? The storm is flying around, the ship is being swayed back and forth, knocking at the dock, and now they're knocking down. Had the connector been lifted, they would have died. The connector to the boat stayed on the whole night, and ultimately you came in the next morning. What'd you find? Damage to the dock. The dock owner sues, the court responds. This is what they say. This is obviously, they paskined ultimately that you had to pay, but they're stating this in dicta, but I think it's important in general. Theologians hold that a starving man without moral guilt takes what is necessary to sustain life, but it could hardly be said that the obligations would not be upon such person to pay the value of the property so taken when he becomes able to do so. And so public necessity may require the taking of private property for public purposes, but our system of jurisprudence compensation must be made. Simple. Take it, it's yours, you pay for it. That's really where halacha comes out. That's really where we are in American law at this point. And there's one other case, and I'm going to go a lot quicker, and we're going to conclude. The next case is the case of Reeves versus Foreman, where a person was trying to get out of the way, saving his life when he was driving. He ended up on someone else's property. The issue at the appellate court was whether or not that was an intentional trespass or not. And look what he says. Culpable of moral fault, if any, is said to be attributed to the actor's refusal to pay for the damage done in the course of serving his interest rather than what he did. Right? You did it. You had to do it. Pay for it. While the legal fault centers around the notion that there was an intentional invasion of legal protected interest. Meaning, if you have to do it, it's legal for you to actually trespass. And the way the restatements, and just to give you a sense, the restatements, as everybody knows, they're sort of the codifications of principles that are, you know, it's published by the ALI, but it's used many, many times by court to really get a sense of where we're holding in common law, which is ultimately where cases are drawn from. And if you look at the restatements in 197 and 263 here, it sort of lays out the principle that way, which is, and I'll read just a few lines starting from one. One is privileged to enter or remain on land in the possession of other if it is or reasonably appears to be necessary to prevent serious harm to the actor, his land, chattels, or other or third persons. If you look at the comments here on the bottom, and you can read this yourself later on, the comments, the privilege stated in this subsection exists only when in an emergency the actor entered land for the purpose of protecting himself, or the possessor of land of a third person, or the land of chattels of such persons. Furthermore, the privilege must be exercised in a reasonable time and a reasonable manner. And then da-da-da-da-da. Stating here, obviously, that should you need it, privilege allows you to trespass. And the restatement of torts on 263 agrees with that. But I want to read one concept and then conclude. Duty of compensation. This is where I want to bring out one point. In 263, which pretty much restates the earlier one, duty of compensation. Where the dealing with the chattel of another is for the protection of the other, the privilege is complete and the actor is subject to no liability. But where the dealing with another's chattel is for the purpose of protecting the actor or a third person, emphasis on the third person, the privilege is incomplete and the actor is subject to liability for actual harm done to chattel. Since the actor that avoids harm in no way threatened by the conduct of the other, he's not entitled to commandeer the use of other's goods for his own protection or that of a third person without making good of any loss thus caused. And if you look at the New York Penal Code, set similar concept as well. Ultimately, should you be in a situation of an emergency, you are able to use certain trespasses and ultimately steal to save a life. And this, with this I want to conclude. It seems as follows. Stealing is a big deal. It shouldn't be taken lightly. Ultimately, you can steal to save a life. But here's where I want to draw a distinction. And this is what I want to conclude here as the difference between halacha and Torah. There's plenty of differences. Where it comes from is different. And I want to maybe leave the audience with two points. It seems from the case law, in American law, that the cases that they speak about are sort of public problem cases. The courts are drawing from what seems like compassion. There's a storm. You're going to die. You protect your life. Get it. What if it's somebody who is a moral outcast, a communal outcast, and he steals something because he's got AIDS and whatever it is, and it's not as popular? Do the courts potentially give the same rights to people? You would think so, especially based on the restatements. But it's not clear that if the circumstance wasn't one that strings on the heartstrings of the judge and give a scenario in which everybody obviously realizes this is a danger, if the courts would go that way. They may not. I don't think it's clear. Halacha, completely different. Clear as day. Pasuk, Gemara, Halacha. Here's the situation. You can, but you have to pay for it. And here's the divergence. In Halacha, what happens when you want to save someone else's life? You're duty-bound. If you're duty-bound, then if you do, what am I going to do for you? I'm giving you a pass. American law, you have a pass, according to their statements. If you save the life of a third person and you have to pay, yes, according to their statements. It seemed like that's the law. How come? Because you're not duty-bound. And it would seem that the divergence of whether or not I have to help somebody else in American versus halachic law leads towards that policy of wanting to a community that helps each other in death situations leads to the policy decisions of the judge makers and the lawmakers of whether or not I will allow the person saving to be exempt or be liable for the damage. That's the concept. That's the discussion. I'm around for as long as you want. Maariv is at 9 and 9:30. Thank you guys so much for coming and listening. And if everyone wants to leave, can leave.